First case, Scherer v. Marriott, 11-3833. Mr. Friedman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jeremy Friedman, and it is my honor to represent Marjorie Friedman Scherer here today. In this case, the Court is asked to construe and apply federal ADA regulations concerning the design of accessible public accommodations. In particular, the Court must determine whether, under the 2010 ADA regulations, if a hotel uses a spring hinge as a door closer in a designated ADA hotel room to close a passageway door, may it comply only with the 1.5-second standard for spring hinges and not comply with the 5-second requirement for door closers.
May I ask a preliminary question? I know you're not the ADA or whatever. Where I stayed last night at the Indian League Club, there's no spring and there's no hydraulic. It's a simple hinge door. You open the door, it stays open, and you close the door when you leave. Why are we having this spring with something in the door that chases you out the door? I don't understand.
Why is the question, why is it that,
yes,
why does the hinge have a spring?
Why do we have to have that for disabled or whatever? What's the advantage?
The ADA does not require the use of either a spring hinge, a regular hinge, or even an arm-type mechanical closer. Those things are required either by the fire code, for example. The fire code requires that there be a self-closing door on a fire door.
On the bathroom?
No, it's only on the fire doors. And in this case, the entry door was
a fire door.
Yeah,
I understand that.
So the reason for the spring hinge
on the bathroom door
was not compelled by the ADA or the fire code. Instead, it was used by the hotel to prevent the bathroom door from coming in contact with the entry door. They wanted the bathroom door to be a self-closing door, and they needed to put a closing device upon that self-closing door in order to have no conflict. There were other options for the hotel.
I don't want to dwell on it. It didn't make any sense to me, but you can go ahead. I don't want to take up your time.
Okay, well, it's actually an important point because I think they could have complied with the ADA and the fire code and avoided the conflict if they simply had the bathroom door go into the bathroom rather than outside of the bathroom. Then it wouldn't have come in conflict with the front door.
It would probably block the shower then or something.
Well, the reason why is the ADA has a requirement that there are 60 inches of turning space within the bathroom for an ADA room. So if the hotel was to design the bathroom door to go inside so that it didn't conflict with the outside, the entry door, they would have had to increase the space, potentially, inside the bathroom, and that would have required them to move a wall. And that's why they didn't want to do that. The ADA required them to make the room inside the bathroom if the door was to go in larger. They could have simply used a ADA accessible closer on the outside, but that also would have caused them to increase the size of the bathroom because you need 12-inch clearing space on the push side of the door. So essentially what they did is they used a spring hinge door closer and pretended and contend here today that a spring hinge door closer is not a door closer, and therefore they didn't have to put any of those space limitations. It was in a way of avoiding the ADA compliance.
Are they really saying that it's not a door closer, or is Marriott saying that it's regulated under a separate provision of the regulation?
It's a difficult for me to answer that question because I've heard it come both ways from the defendants here. It clearly is a door closer, but they contended the door closer requirement doesn't apply. So I guess if I was to rearticulate their position, they would have to concede, as the record is very clear, that a spring hinge is a door closer. The photographs that we give you in the record show that this particular spring hinge has door closer.
Stamped on it.
Stamped
door
on
closer,
it. Right.
But
so
that hinge could have been put in a cabinet or a closet or anywhere in that room, really, couldn't it?
That's exactly correct. We believe that the spring hinge requirement really goes towards cabinet and closet doors, because those are the type of doors that you're only going to open up about 70 degrees and reach into, and you don't want it snapping back on your hands.
Well, the regulation itself in the 2010 version says door and gate spring hinges. So it seems to contemplate that it would be used in doors.
It's true. The regulation is not artfully drawn to be clear on this point. However, the plain language would require that you apply the door closer requirement if you're going to be using a spring hinge door closer. But the spring hinge can be used as a door closer, and it can be ADA accessible under the 5-second rule. It doesn't have a delayed action mechanism, but it can be set to close in 5 seconds.
That would be pretty difficult, though, wouldn't it? You're saying to comply with both sets of speeds?
Yes, because
so that it could move. Say, if it was at about 90 degrees, it would have to move 20 degrees in 3.5 seconds, and then the remaining 70 degrees in 1.5 seconds?
No, Your Honor. These are minimum standards. So it can comply with the 5 seconds and the 1.5 seconds, and there's no difficulty involved in it.
How could it comply with the 1.5?
Because it's a minimum standard. So it can be 5 seconds, and it still complies with the minimum 1.5.
It would have to be 5 seconds. 5 seconds would comply with the 1.5 seconds is what you're
correct.
Saying.
Correct. Also, the important...
So you're saying it can be... You can always make it longer.
You can always
make it
longer.
It'll comply. So, in other words, use the 5.
Correct. And
but if that's the case, then 404.2.8.2 has no application, it seems.
Well, Your Honor, our position is that it does have application. But before I say that, I'd like to say this. Even if there is no practical application, what we're talking about is a subsumed lesser minimum standard. When they're not in conflict, it's not a problem for this court to be able to say that there are two standards. One has less of a practical implication. We certainly shouldn't read the regulation in such a way that it's contrary to the purposes and intent of the statute, or that it's contrary to the plain language of the regulation, just so that we can give some meaning to a swallowed-up lesser minimum standard. I think the question really is, why do we have the Department of Justice adopting a 1.5 second standard for spring hinges? What's the purpose behind that? And really, that question leads to a separate question, which is, because in 2010, when the Department of Justice amended the regulations, they were simply making it consistent with the prior existing industry standards, in particular the ANSI 1998 standard. So what they were trying to do is make the 2010 ADA regulations consistent with the ANSI standards. So the question is, why in 1998 did they develop a separate 1.5 second for spring hinges, different from the 5 seconds of the door closer? And we don't have a direct answer to that. This case was dismissed before we took any discovery, so I don't have any direct testimony from the promulgators of the 1998 ANSI standards that can explain that. But I believe that it is what was pointed out by this court, which is that the spring hinge standard was not intended to cover the door when you use the spring hinge as a door closer. It was intended to cover those instances when it's not on a passageway, such as in a closet.
But the regulation doesn't say that. It doesn't say when used as or what have you. It has two separate sections that all come under the heading of closing speed. It doesn't say when the door closer is used as a gate closer or when the spring hinge is used as a door closer. It doesn't have that language in it.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, and I think that supports our case, which is that if you're going to use a spring hinge as a door closer, you have to comply with the door closer requirements and you have to comply with the spring hinge requirements.
Well, you could write the regulation that way, but it's not written that way.
Well, the regulation on its face is written to say that if you're going to use a door closer, it has to close in a minimum of 5 seconds. There's no statement in the regulations that exempts spring hinges from the door closer requirement. That is an implied revocation, an implied repeal that the defendants are trying to say should be applied in this case. And as Judge Easterbrook held in the Illinois mortgage case that we cited in our briefs at page 30 to 31, there has to be an irreconcilable conflict between these two standards before you say one repeals the other. But I do have a final answer as to what is the meaning of this regulation if it, both of them apply. Why do we have a 1.5 seconds? And that is that they both measure from different distances or different areas, particular references. The door closer requirement of 5 seconds is from 90 degrees to 12 degrees, and the spring hinge is requirement is 1.5 seconds from 70 degrees to close. So because they have different areas of regulation, it's perfectly acceptable to say that the 1.5 second has its own meaning, even if they both apply. Indeed, I would ask, if the two provisions were mutually exclusive, as the defendants contend, why would the regulations have these two different reference points? It's possible, but not likely, to have a standard adjustable door closer that would close in 5 seconds from 90 to 12, but fail the 1.5 seconds from 70 to close.
Is that in the record that that's physically possible to do that?
It's not in the record, Your Honor. But it is possible. However, it's unlikely. I mean, if you're going to have a door closer that closes in 5 seconds from 90 to 12, it's probably also going to meet the spring hinge requirement. But if it's not a spring hinge, you don't have to worry about it. I think that has something to do with the way spring hinges. The further you open up, the faster they snap back. A door closer is different. It regulates the speed as it goes, and it gives a delayed action mechanism. However, if the court was to hold what the defendants are contending, that you need only comply with the spring hinge requirement, hotel will use the spring hinges as the door closers in ADA rooms, and they will meet those 1.5 second requirements for the spring hinges from 70 to close. But it will not meet the 5 seconds from 90 to 12. And that's what's causing the problem with the situation that we have here. Common sense and uncontradicted expert testimony established that 1.5 seconds is simply not sufficient amount of time for disabled hotel guests to maneuver within and into ADA accessible rooms. We all know people like my mother who's using a walker or a wheelchair and are going to be unable to get through the threshold in that amount of time. There's a risk of impact with the self-closing door, a risk of serious injury. As our experts pointed out, including Richard Gill, one of the experts that we had in the related case, these falls are a leading cause of death for the elderly and disabled. And a knockdown fall caused by a self-closing door is well understood in the industry. That is why the ADA puts in a requirement of a minimum closing time. If it's not safe, it's not accessible. Here, Mrs. Scherer asks that the court adopt a rule. When two or more ADA standards apply to the same design or same use, all standards should be given effect, with the requirements that provide the most accessibility, the highest degree of accessibility, in control. That rule that we ask the court to adopt is consistent with the construction of the ADA, its plain language, the intent behind the statute, and the intent behind the regulatory change in 2010. As Judge Connelly held in the related case, the use of a spring hinge on a door in an ADA room was regulated as a door closer under the 1994 regulations. Under the 1994 regulations, spring hinges don't have delayed action mechanisms, but they are adjustable mechanical devices that use mechanical force to close a door. It is inconceivable that the intent of the Department of Justice in 2010 was to increase the minimum closing time for doors with closers from 3 seconds to 5 seconds, while simultaneously allowing hotels to use spring hinges as those door closers and lower or eliminate the minimum closing time of 3 seconds and lower it to only 1.5 seconds. Now, door closer is not defined in the ADA standards, nor is it defined in the ANSI standards. That's because neither the ADA nor ANSI require the use of a closer. Instead, they require a measure of accessibility if a door closer is used. Now, the National Fire Prevention Association standard, NFPA 80, it does require the use of door closers. And it defines a door closer as a closing, as a labeled device that uses mechanical force that returns the door to a closed position and can be used to regulate the speed.
This is for bathrooms?
This is any time.
Fire code?
No, unless your bathroom door is a fire.
I'm trying to figure out who says you got to put one in the bathroom.
Nobody says you have to put it in the bathroom. It was a decision, it was a design, a centralized design decision by Marriott in Bethesda affecting 57 different locations to put a spring hinge on that, to put a spring hinge door closer on the bathroom door in order to avoid conflict with the front door. And there were other ways they could have resolved that. It would have required to either have the door go in or maybe move the door to the other side of the hinge. There were other ways to address it that would have caused them to maybe have to reconfigure the hotel rooms, and that's why they did it. They didn't want to have to go through the cost of reconfiguring the doors, the bathrooms, and the rooms themselves potentially simply to comply with the ADA. That's why they used it.
That light means you're in your rebuttal time?
I would like to use the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Trapp?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This Court should affirm Judge Norgel's order granting judgment on the pleadings, as it is clear that the spring hinge at issue complies with the applicable 2010 ADA standards governing spring hinges. I'd like to address just a couple points that Mr. Friedman made in the course of his argument. He seemingly admitted that his sought-after application of the regulations would swallow up the regulation governing spring hinges. And I agree, but it's not like it's going the opposite way. The regulation for door closers preexisted the spring hinge regulation and existed from the time that the original ADA regulations were put into place. The new standard for spring hinges was put into place only in 2010 was when it became enforceable. So it's clear that it was not meant to be swallowed up, and that the pre-existing five-second standard did not apply to spring hinges, else there would have been no need for another 1.5-second standard that, even according to plaintiff's counsel, would have been swallowed up in the five-second standard. That means that it should be given force and effect by this Court, because it's clear that the Court is required to follow the plain meaning of statutes and, in this case, regulations.
Well, there are two problems here that trouble me with your position. One is this device is labeled door closer right there on the face of it.
Correct.
And second, it's used as a door closer. So why doesn't the door closer provision apply to it?
Well, I would point out that the question before this Court is a question of law. And the fact that a manufacturer may have stamped a particular hinge with a door closer stamp on it does not render it a door closer within the meaning of the applicable regulations promulgated by the Department of Justice.
Doesn't that reflect, though, that the industry understands it to be a door closer, that's accepted in the industry as a door closer?
I'm not sure if it reflects that, but even if it did, it would be irrelevant to whether the Department of Justice understands.
What purpose would it serve?
I'm sorry?
What purpose would it serve under your description?
What purpose would the stamp on the door closer serve?
When you put it on, the person affixing this device, for what reason does he affix it, he or she?
The spring hinge to the door, you mean, Your Honor? As Mr. Friedman indicated, presumably to close the door.
That's why it's a door closer, I assume.
Well, it acts to close a door. We have no problem admitting that, but that does not render it a door closer.
Does it make it a door closer?
Correct. Especially when there's... it's actually a pretty basic point. There are two different regulations. One covers door closers. One covers spring hinges. There would be no need to have one covering spring hinges if they were subsumed within the door closer regulation. And so for that, I would like to turn back to the fact that it was implemented after the pre-existing door closer standard has already been in place for near 20 years. Now the Department of Justice adopts the 2004 ADAGS and says the enforceable regulations under the ADA will now regulate spring hinges. Previously it did not because it only regulated door closers. And if you look in the appendix towards the end of the supplemental appendix that we filed with our brief, Your Honors, you'll see that there's an industry article discussing door closers and spring hinges and makes clear that there's in the industry there's a clear difference between door closers and spring hinges. And even though spring hinges do act to close doors, that does not render them legally a door closer within the meaning of the regulations promulgated by the ADA. If you look just basically at the words of the regulation itself in section 404.2.8 governs closing speed. And it governs closing speed for doors, doorways, and gates, as Your Honor's pointed out. That means that it's obvious that these devices will close a door, both of them, a door closer and a spring hinge, and yet there are separate regulations. I think that the clear intent of the regulation shows that by having separate regulations that it's intended to govern them separately. And I think that's exactly what this court should do.
Does the spring hinge enable a more, I'll call it, efficient design for the bathroom? They say that the reason that Marriott did this was to avoid having to enlarge the bathroom or to have the direction the door opens and all that sort of thing. It gets around what would otherwise be an expensive, more expensive alteration.
Well, perhaps if it were required to use a door closer, but as Mr. Friedman pointed out, there is no requirement under the regulations that any regulated entity use a door closer or a spring hinge. They could use one or the other, or they could use neither. They don't have to put anything on that door. And the only way that there was a conflict, if there would indeed be a conflict, is if they chose to use a door closer. They didn't have to do that, and they still don't have to do it. The fact that they chose to use a spring hinge means that they're regulated by the spring hinge standard, and that's why we think that the district court was correct in granting judgment on the pleadings.
Yes, that's right. Simple question is, they didn't need to put it on. Why did they do it?
That I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know why the architects chose to do it that way. I don't know why the building contractor...
Wasn't there some testimony it was, as Mr. Friedman said, to avoid the conflict with the
There was some impression given in the underlying personal injury matter that was where they were driving. I don't know that was proven. The case settled, and I don't know how I would answer that question here today, but I would point out again that it's clear that there is leeway given under the regulations for an entity to choose whether it will put a spring hinge or a door closer, and if so, which one it will utilize. There's no there's no dispute about that. I would also point out that it's conceded throughout the complaint in numerous instances that this is, in fact, a spring hinge. While it may be used as a door closer, meaning that it will close a door, that's true of all spring hinges that are regulated under the Department of Justice guidelines. They will all close a door. That's the operative assumption that the Department of Justice was working under when it promulgated that regulation, is spring hinges close doors. We can candidly admit that, but it doesn't render them as door closers under the five-second standard. And if you look at the complaint in paragraph 62, it provides the actual measured speed for the spring hinge that is at issue here. It was 2.58 seconds, and it's clear that meets the 1.5-second standard that it is governed by. Therefore, the district court was correct in granting judgment on the pleadings. Even if Your Honors had some further concern about the regulations and whether or not it was intended to be a separate regulation from a door closer, I guess I would throw out two items for your consideration. The first would be, I would assert that it's the plain meaning of the statute. If you want to look beyond the meaning of those regulations, however, I would point Your Honors to the 1999 notice of proposed rulemaking that was put out by the Access Board and is what first mentioned the spring hinge standard. And it specifically called it, if I can find this in the brief, it specifically called it a new provision. It says, this is on page 9 of our brief, it says, this section also includes a new provision for spring hinges. I think that language is pretty important here because, one, it shows that it's a new provision and is obviously not intended to be swallowed up by the old language. And second, it shows that it's applicable for spring hinges as opposed to door closers.
Well, the purpose of the whole closing speed regulation was to keep, to minimize the disabled who would get whacked by the door as they were going through, right?
Presumably, yes.
And is 1.5 seconds sufficient time to meet that purpose?
Well, that I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could get experts on both sides of the question, but the real question for this court is not whether it's safe for a disabled individual in any particular circumstance, but it's whether or not the hotel complied with the applicable regulation. There's never been any court that has found that compliance with a regulation can result in liability just because that regulation may not be safe. As Judge Norgal pointed out, that sort of argument is really directed towards the standard itself, not Marriott's compliance with the standard. The standard is put out as the law by the Department of Justice. Compliance with that standard is compliance with the law, and there are numerous cases that have held to that effect. So I hear you, and I think as a policy argument, perhaps that's a good policy argument. But policy arguments should be directed towards the Access Board and the Department of Justice, not towards your honors, who are charged with simply implementing or construing the statute as it is written, and that's how it's written.
Are you going to say something about standing?
I am, especially since you mentioned it, Your Honor.
Since you raised the point,
Your Honor.
Half the brief.
I would say we definitely agree with Judge Norgal's ruling, finding that the plaintiff did not have standing as to the 56 additional Courtyard hotels. I think there's not much question about that under the applicable standards, and I would stand on our brief as to the 56 hotels. As to Judge Norgal's ruling on the single hotel in Overland Park, that is really what this case turns on, we have asserted in our brief as additional alternative sustaining grounds, if you will, that this deterrent effect doctrine cannot be used to circumvent the constitutional standards for standing. Standing, as Your Honors are aware, it really focuses on the fact that an individual must show future harm and a likelihood of future harm, not just speculative, not just conjectural, but a likelihood of future harm. Indeed, under Title III, the whole idea is that you can only get an injunction going forward, so to restrain future harm as to that particular plaintiff, not for a generalized grievance for disabled persons nationwide or in any other area. Every court to have considered the standing requirements under Title III has held that for a litigant to prove standing, they must allege and prove some form of future harm. Here, we allege that has not happened with regards to the single hotel. In the complaint, there was no mention of any specific or concrete plans to return to the hotel. As Judge Norgal noted in his opinion, that if the standard were intent to return, then Ms. Scher would likely not have met that standard. However, he then turned to Ninth Circuit precedent to assert that under the deterrent effect doctrine that you could use that as an alternative for an intent to return. And I would submit to Your Honors today that's incorrect. One, it's not Seventh Circuit precedent, but even if you look at the precedent from the Ninth Circuit that applies that doctrine, that doctrine does not ignore intent to return. In fact, one cannot be deterred from taking an action that they would not have otherwise taken. So you have to show as a baseline minimum that there was an intent to return.
Some well, Mrs. Scherer, expressed, even though she's quite elderly, but apparently has a lot of relatives within the radius of that, of the place where she got injured. And she liked the place and would go back there if it were safe or something. So
yeah.
She at least expressed an intent to return there.
She expressed a generalized intent to return that under a Supreme Court precedent.
Well, you've got to have a specific date when somebody's getting married or something.
Well, yeah, if the test is intent to return, I think you would have to show concrete, particularized plans that will show actual harm. The other method, which I don't think that the deterrent effect doctrine is totally without merit. However, I do think that it's needlessly confusing for litigants and for courts because it's viewed as a alternative to intent to return, when it's not, in fact, an alternative. To be, as I mentioned a moment ago, to be deterred, you have to first have an intent to return. Otherwise, there's nothing to deter.
The deterrent effect is, you're talking about global or national or whatever, versus this one specific location.
Well, but
I'm talking about standing, and there's a distinction between the two.
Yes, there definitely is, and I'm talking about it with this particular location, too, the single hotel at Overland Park, because that is what Judge Norgal's ruling was based on, finding that there was standing, is that under the intent to return standard, he said that there was likely not sufficient allegations to meet the standing requirements. However, applying deterrent effect as an alternative, he found that there was standing. I would submit that skips the primary step that must be taken, which is proving the intent to return. I do agree that under Supreme Court and other precedent, Laidlaw in particular, that you could show that you were deterred from returning and perhaps reduce slightly the necessary intent to return. For example, Your Honor, to show a concrete and specific intent to return, I think you would need a date, a wedding, things like that you have already made plans for, you've already shown a reservation, and you're going to return. But for the deterrent effect, I would say you have to show that you had some, at least generalized intent to be there and a reason to be there, and then were actually deterred by an actual violation of the ADA. I would submit that even if you could try to plead that sort of alternative here, it has not been done in the complaint because there was no pleading of an actual deterrent effect.
You didn't cross appeal on the standing issue, did you?
I did not.
Do you really want us to decide it on a standing basis?
I think that Your Honors could. I don't think it's necessary here because of the statute of limitations and the fact that the 2010 standards make it clear that the spring hinge regulation is the only one that applies, but I think you could decide the entire issue based on standing.
Shouldn't you have cross-appealed if you wanted to make...
I researched that, Your Honor, and I found numerous cases that said that cross-appeals were unnecessary when you weren't seeking to modify the judgment.
Like you are trying to modify it, though.
Well, but it's an alternative...
To have it eliminated under a standing basis.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, we won 100% of what we wanted in the lower court. I don't want to modify that in any way. However, if you were to find that this 2010 standard somehow worked as a door closer, then I would say, as an alternative ground to upholding the district court's ruling, I would suggest that the plaintiff does not have standing and that Judge Norgal got that aspect of his opinion wrong. But I don't think that we needed to cross appeal. And I'm not sure if this light means I'm near the end.
I think it goes red to the red one when you're.
Okay.
But you don't have to go all the way to the red one.
Well, I would. I'll just stand. If you don't have any further questions, I'll stand on that and reiterate that it's clear that the judgment should be affirmed because the 2010 standards are applicable only to spring hinges and not to door closers. That even if Ms. Scherer could get by the standing arguments as to the single hotel, she would run abruptly into the Seventh Circuit precedent with regards to the statute of limitations. And for that reason, I don't think there's any way that Ms. Scherer can prevail here. And I think that the district court got it right, and I would ask Your Honors to affirm it. Thank you very much.
Friedman, do you have anything else?
I could use a little of my rebuttal time.
I guess I'd like to talk about standing for a second, since I didn't have a chance to talk about that on the opening. Mr. Trapp is incorrect when he says that the ADA is a statute that's only supposed to remedy for one individual. In fact, Congress has considerable authority to shape the assessment of standing under the ADA. And what they've done is they've created a public right that is enforced by private individuals. Mr. Scheer stands as one of those individuals who is exactly the type of person that you would want to enforce this public right. She has to have an individualized injury in fact, which she has, and that confers standing to make this challenge. She is trying to correct a centralized design flaw that was made by Marriott in Bethesda. It affected 57 different locations, but this is not 57 different lawsuits. In fact, to say that we don't have standing to challenge the other hotels where she hasn't visited in the past would mean that the only way you could enforce the ADA against Marriott in this case would be to have 57 different lawsuits by 57 different disabled hotel guests who have individualized knowledge of each location. And that's not necessary in this case. Many circuits, including the 9th, 8th, and 1st, have expressly adopted the deterrent effect doctrine. The deterrent effect doctrine means that there is known discriminatory conditions as they exist and a present ongoing injury in the sense that you are deterred from going to those places. That is true not only for the Overland Park Hotel, where Mrs. Scheer had definite plans, definite desires to go back, as she did at the time the case was filed, and that's when the standing is conferred. She does still to today.
You're not contending that Marriott waived the standing argument?
I think the failure to cross-appeal does provide a basis for this court to not address those questions. If they had cross-appealed, then we could have briefed this issue differently. There would have been a whole matter of discussion about whether or not Judge Norgal's decision was or was not correct on standing. And we could have had an opportunity to file an opposition rather than a small section in the reply brief. I think it's perfectly acceptable for this court not to address the defendant's standing argument. We still have a standing argument because we did say that the standing should include the other 56 hotels. But to turn back to the 2010 regulations, I would like to say that in response to the question by the court, is 1.5 seconds sufficient amount of time for a disabled person to get through the threshold or through the passageway? Mr. Trapp says there's expert testimony on both sides. That's not true. The expert testimony is uncontradicted in this record. This case involves uncontradicted testimony that 1.5 seconds on a spring hinge in an ADA accessible room is not accessible. It's not safe. I'd refer the court to page...
But it is the standard, isn't it? Under the door closer provision, it's there.
It's there, but it takes a court's interpretation to rule that the standard for spring hinges is exclusive of the standard of door closers before you get to that conclusion. If you adopt the construction of the defendants that it is exclusive, then we have a problem with this regulation. This regulation would be inconsistent with the statute, and it would be the obligation of the court to hold it invalid. Now, we know that the Department of Justice is not a party to this case, and therefore there's no administrative record before the court.
You've gotten to your red light, so you're going to have to wrap up.
Oh, okay. On the basis of the briefs and the arguments made, we suggest that the court reverse.
All right. Thank you to both sides. The case will be taken under advisement. And we'll